Thank you, Kim. It's Bill Lipp. It's Wendy Snyder. It's 720 WGN. And these school shootings happening more and more frequently. I don't know how much discussion happens in your house, but Jim and I were discussing putting metal detectors in schools. And then we're saying, wow, that'll cause some bottlenecks and it'll be tough for kids to come and go. And then I thought, well, you could have many doors with metal detectors and stagger the start time of students, like A through N comes in this door at this time.
Right.
But that's a lot of planning, and there seems to be a more simple solution. And is he ready? Tom Mikitas on the line with us. He is a professor of history over at DePaul University. And typically, we talk to Tom about terrorism, but this is domestic terrorism, would you say, Tom?
Well, it's an act of terror. What's missing, of course, is any ideological motive. If they discover that there was one, which doesn't seem to be the case, that would come be true. But it really doesn't matter. I mean, security from these sorts of attacks is pretty much the same as security from a terrorist attack, in terms of building safety and things of that nature.
Wendy just brought up the discussion of metal detectors in schools. The high school that my daughters attended had metal detectors. And, you know, I was split on it because part of me says there's a loss of innocence there. But the other part is
you
give in to the fact that society has bent a certain way and you almost have to play by its rules at some point.
And if it's going to make you safer, it's a small price to pay.
Right.
Yeah. Let me be really clear. I don't object to that. And, in certain environments, it's part of what we call layered security, hardening a building. I just think the danger is when we believe that is sufficient. And that's what the point of the piece that I wrote was, is because, you get a phenomenon called target displacement, which means we saw it in the Manchester bombing. Okay. They knew they couldn't get into a tightly secured concert hall. They didn't have to. They waited for everybody to come out of the building and blew up the bomb in the vestibule. When you have thousands of kids trying to get into a large building, you're going to have throngs of them at whatever checkpoint you have, and that becomes your new target. That's where the problem is, so it can help. There's some evidence. I think it was the church shooting in Texas, it may have been Dylan Ruth. He was looking for a school, and of course the schools were protected. Okay. For someone like that, who's coming by at an odd hour, that'll work. What it will be problematic for is when the kids are thronging the building in the morning to get in. These guys are not being mentally ill or being emotionally disturbed. Doesn't mean you're stupid. Doesn't mean you can't plan. And they frequently do.
Well, that's something we had Phil Andrew, who was a victim of the Lori Dan shooting 30 years ago.
Yeah.
He was in the studio with us, along with, I believe, Audrey White from Peace Warriors. And she goes to school in Lawndale. She's a junior in high school, and she's behind this Peace Warriors, where she said someone doesn't just wake up and say, I'm going to shoot up a school. They're either bullied, they have an issue with someone, they're planning this. And that's something I failed to realize.
Well, actually, it's interesting you mentioned. My wife, we were living in Winnetka at the time of Lori Dan. My wife was the on-call pastor who ended up going up to the school. So we had quite a bit of, background on that. And what came out almost immediately is Lori Dan's ex-husband saying, now you guys finally get it. The police in Winnetka had gone to Gary Wasserman, Lori Dan's father, and expressed concern and wanted the gun turned over. And he said, oh, don't worry, I'll secure it. She's absolutely right that, all of these cases, there is certainly background evidence. So training people, to do interventions, to recognize warning signs, that's a really important and neglected piece of the puzzle.
Tom, last week, Texas's Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick blamed the massacre and the shooting there on what he called too many entrances and too many exits. Is that big of a deal, having entrances and exits? I would put, if I had to qualify the numbers of blame, that would be in the top 50 maybe, but it wouldn't be my number one reason to blame.
You're absolutely right. It isn't. And I think in part, it is an effort to deflect the discussion away from the firearm debate. Yes, it can help under certain circumstances. But, the issue, as I said, is if you create a throng of several hundred students, how many exits do you want to reduce it to? Try getting 2,000 or 3,000 kids into Lane Tech through one door. Or how many do you want to go to? Four, five, six? Wherever you are, you're going to have hundreds of people thronging to get through. And anybody, I tell you, having raised three sons, getting a teenager to school on time.
Oh, my God.
You know, this idea of coming in early and being well prepared, you're lucky you get them out the door with their lunch and their coat and their hat. A lot of them are going to be showing up last minute. And no matter what you do, you're always going to have that.
The Santa Fe, Texas shooter, the gun was gotten by his father, and we were talking about that doesn't seem to be a problem. I think a parent should, or a registered gun owner should secure their gun. What if a parent had cocaine laying around and a kid got into it? Yeah. They'd be responsible for that. Why not a gun?
Absolutely. And the thing that the other part of that conversation is the number of people who are killed because of accidental discharges, children finding the gun and things of that nature. That happens on a fairly regular basis in the U.S. So absolutely right. I'm not one of these people who says take away everybody's guns. But if you're having it for sport or for hunting, and I know people who do, I know one individual, he's got a gun safe in his basement. It's locked. It's secure. You can't just walk in and get a hold of the firearm. And you have to figure out, you know, that you have to be reasonable, any parent, that your child might be one of the ones who would find it. In fact, is the most likely one to get it.
Tom, is there any other country on earth that has a problem anywhere near like ours? I've never seen anything like it except for the United States.
There was a study done, and I think it was the late 90s through, early in the decade, that talked about something like, you know, we have 4% of the population of the world, but 42% of the privately owned guns and 31% of the mass shooters were American. I'm not saying it never happens, but it's an isolated incident. There was one a number of years ago in Scotland. But for the most part, this is a, you know, predominantly American issue where you have these random actors, these active shooters going in and trying to take out large numbers of people in schools. You did have the case in Norway, no question, with Anders Breivik. But again, that was an outlier. And again, there were warning signs. And, you know, people missed them. That is a case of a comfortable society not believing could ever happen there.
So if it was any kind of a rational society, and I wish so badly it was, you'd say to yourself, all those other incidents are truly isolated incidents. But here in America, when it starts happening once every couple of weeks, we almost become numb to it. Doesn't something need to be done when that happens?
And I think that's the point. I think the grassroots agitation by the Parkland students is a very encouraging sign that, even responsible sports people, you know, I think are willing to say, look, you don't need high capacity magazines. You don't need bump stocks. It's reasonable to have trigger guards. You do need extensive background checks. And if you cannot, you know, rent a car until you're over 21, why on earth would you be allowed to buy a firearm? You can't drink until you're 21 legally.
Right.
So why should you be allowed to purchase a firearm?
I know that people have guns legally, and you know what goes on in the majority of the people who have guns legally, there doesn't seem to be a problem with. I don't want a gun in my house, and that's my decision. But I don't understand how automatic weapons can be sold, or even semi-automatic, because people will now text and say, Wendy, you're ignorant. You don't know the difference between semi-automatic and automatic. Either way, there's no reason for a civilian to have that gun.
The only difference is the automatic, semi-automatic thing is fairly simple. By simply holding down the trigger, you get a continuous rate of fire as you do with a machine gun. Semi-automatic still just means you have to pull the trigger each time you fire. But if you've got, you know, you've got an assault rifle with a large capacity magazine, that's a distinction without much of a difference. And in some cases, you can actually purchase conversion kits. Will it allow you to convert them? Now, I'm not sure if they've cracked down on those. So, you know, yes, we can quibble about these. That's why we should have an honest discussion. You know, I think the most responsible people I ever talked to on this are actually hunters. So they're like, look, the deer don't have body armor. I don't need Teflon-coated bullets. Even when they hunt big game, I have asked, how many bullets you have in the gun? Only three, two or three, so the guide can keep track of it. You know, they're often very responsible. And many of those people, by the way, have left the NRA, you know, when it became so political.
Yeah.
And that's just it. It's political. If someone wants to have a gun, they should follow the rules. And this has been brought up. We need common sense laws. When we have a discussion about this, it does seem like common sense.
Yeah. And I think that's, and I think, you know, I'm hoping that that will out. The other thing that's sort of interesting, I'm in my other life, I'm a Revolutionary War reenactor, so I actually have a British Brown Bess replica musket, and I can assure you, you're not going to massacre anybody with it. But if you keep in mind that that was the weapon at the time of the Bill of Rights was written, single shot, about 30 seconds to load, and misfires one out of five times.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other thing to keep in mind that the right to bear arms in the Constitution is intimately linked to the responsibility to serve in a government-regulated militia, which today would be the National Guard. It was never intended, I think, to be unfettered access to any kind of firearm that you want whenever you want it.
And the kids at Parkland, again, I am embarrassed that adults didn't come up with what they really fought for to do some more gun control issues. What's happened with that? Because we were all taking notice, and then it seems to have fizzled out.
We won't know. I mean, the real issue is, will the energy be sustained through the fall election, where they start to say, really, you know, the ones that are old enough to vote, to press on the issue of, you know, really hold their representative's feet to the fire and say, look, where do you stand on this issue? And don't equivocate and don't evade and don't do this, that, or the other. Where do you stand on reasonable gun legislation?
Tom, I think you may have seen the story. The Parkland kids, about a week or so ago, did a demonstration in a Publix grocery store in Florida.
Yes.
They called it a die-in, I think, where they all just laid on the floor as though they had been shot in the grocery store to call attention. And Publix went out of their way to recognize this and say, hey, we understand it. We get it. We're behind it.
I think but the other point of it wasn't the point. They were also drawing attention to who Publix was giving money to. You know,
it was NRA, right? But not anymore, right?
Yeah. Well, okay, great. That's exactly what we need. You know, that's the good part of social media and the good part of community grassroots organizing is that people can vote with their dollars, you know, and I think Publix realizes that. They can vote with their vote. You know, they can vote with all kinds of ways, and by drawing attention to these things, you know, I'm an optimist, we can have an impact.
Yep. If you have any questions or comments for Tom Mikitas, 312-981-7200. We've got some calls coming in. Stick around. More ahead, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. It sounds like it's underwater, doesn't it?
Just a little, yeah.
It's a little muffled. We have Tom Mikitas on the line with us. He's a professor of history at DePaul University. We usually talk to him about terrorism. He has written a blog that you can find on his website, which we will give to you because I'm going to let you spell it, Tom. And it's a blog about securing schools is not enough, and we're talking about guns.
It's easier to find it on my Twitter account, which is at Dr. Mikitas.
And spell,
that's the quickest way to find it. I put a link there. Yeah.
At Dr. Mikitas, it's Mokaitis.
And it's Dr. Dr. That's all. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Andy wanted to talk about the whole gun issue. And Andy, this is Tom Mikitas. Dr. Mikitas on the line with us.
Hey, Andy.
Hey, Tom, I have a question. Everyone keeps wondering why in the world would these automatic and semi-automatic weapons be legal? Do you think? Pardon me.
He just said it.
Go
mm-hmm.
ahead. Yeah.
Go
yeah.
ahead. Continue,
yeah.
Andy.
Yeah.
Sure. So, why would anyone need that? You know. So, do you think that it's possibly because of all these gun collectors? They want to collect an AR-15 or 10, and they don't care about anything else because no one should be able to tell them what they can collect or not. It's because of, do you think that that's the reason?
It's a large part of it. You know, of those large numbers of guns in private hands, most of them are owned by about 2% of the population. Yes, there is a desire of don't tread on me, don't tell me what to do. The assault rifle has one purpose, to kill other human beings. Now, to be perfectly fair, regulating rate of fire and regulating things like that are probably more important. You can quite literally finesse the system by taking off, like, you know, a this changing the sight, taking off a bayonet mount, and essentially the gun ceases to be an assault rifle. So it has to be more nuanced and more focused, but that's part of it. The other worrying thing is the number of these militias and these other groups that are really stockpiling these things and ammunition for fear that there's going to be some kind of government takeover. So that's worrisome as well. Again, if you're an honest sportsman, you want to have one and lock it up. I prefer they not be there at all, but if you do, you know, the obligation to have a trigger guard, to have it in the safe, I think that's the way to go. Or better yet, I mean, you can do what they do sometimes in Britain. You have your firearm, if you're a hunter or a sportsman, checked in at a local police station or in a locker at a firing range.
It's well, I think that's a big problem. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Andy, for calling.
Thank you.
And it's, you know, not just school shootings that happen. You think if you have a child who maybe is not emotionally stable, you have to worry about suicide as well.
Absolutely. I mean, there are all kinds of things that have to be. Well, look, bullying is not new. I mean, we've all seen it or experienced it, or, you know, any number of combinations. And the difference is now, I mean, you know, when it was, you know, fists on the playground, the consequences were pretty minimal. You know, when you have the ability to get a firearm, you know, and I think, you know, any young person, you don't have to be severely emotionally unstable. You can be pushed too far. And, you know, that's another reason to have these things restricted.
Tom, since we've got you, this is a little off topic, but it's the kind of thing we normally talk to you about. The president was scheduled to have a summit meeting with Kim Jong-un. It had been derailed, but now it looks like it may be back on again. I know the best case scenario is they reach some sort of an agreement, but what's the worst case scenario?
The worst case scenario is actually the worst case scenario would be to have a meeting and no result. I think what has happened here is it's been about managing expectations. The expectation that there's going to be a dramatic outcome, which I think the president really wants, but that often takes years. And these things are better handled by gradualism. You know, for example, when Kim released the prisoners and then he blew the tunnels out, the logical thing would be, okay, let's not schedule the annual military drill. Let's just ease up a little bit. And what they're wanting is a kind of a quid pro quo rather than an all or none kind of thing. So my fear is the expectations will be very high and the meeting could happen and you could literally have a walkout. Best case scenario would be that they begin to move towards a comprehensive solution, but do it gradually. Kim Jong-un is not going to get rid of all of his missiles immediately and his nuclear weapons, especially when he feels intimidated. So I'm hoping that the cooler heads behind the scene will prevail, and there's some indication that maybe that's happening.
Can we trust him, though? He's a crazy dictator. I don't know if we can trust him.
I trust no one.
And so is Kim Jong-un. They're both.
Well, I think that's a valid point. I think that, but he wants to survive. Now, to be perfectly fair, the rest of the world is asking the question, well, you entered into an agreement with Iran, United States, and you backed out of it.
Yeah.
And we rely on you to keep your word. So, you know, when you try to look at it from both sides and say, look, building trust is what has to happen first.
Right.
But I think the promising thing, it's really in nobody's interest to let this get out of control. And that may be what moves us forth toward the goal line a little better.
See the human Prozac. He makes me feel better by the end of the conversation.
At least on this issue.
Right. Tom, thank you so much.
Right.
Really appreciate your time. It's Tom Mikaitis. And if you want to reach him, at Dr. Mikaitis, MOCKAITIS is your best bet. His website is...
Twitter.
Yeah, go to the Twitter.
Go to the Twitter.
It's easier. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll take a quick break, then we'll find out what Steve has coming up for you next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.